It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha-mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Also on WSMNradio.com. We are enjoying your donations, and they keep us alive, and they keep us on the air. So please, please keep them coming. We don't need a lot, but it does help, and we can bring you this wonderful quality programming that you are enjoying. So please write your checks to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal email address. Sorry, our personal post office box, which is Israel is Real, at P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Write the checks to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal box at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. You can also find out all about us at our website, www.israelisrealnh.com. That's Israel is Real in New Hampshire, israelisrealnh.com. And you can always email us. We'd love to hear your feedback at israelisrael1590@gmail.com. israelisrael1590@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, by the way, so just Google Israel is Real. I'm sure you'll find us there. So, Boker Tov, Sonia.
Boker Tov.
How's the day today, besides freezing?
Freezing. A beautiful freezing. Something new.
Yeah, sunny and freezing. So we have a Hebrew word this morning.
Avdut.
Avdut.
And avad ayin bet daled, or ayin vet daled, is coming from the root of the verb, which means to work. So avdut have a connection with the verb to work. Only that the meaning is slavery.
Slavery.
It's work for free.
Work for free. Also, you know, I understand in a spiritual sense, which we forgot to mention, in a spiritual sense it means worship, prayer, doesn't it? Our work is to pray.
Yes.
In a sense.
Yes, it's to pray, but avdut, it's having only this. Exactly,
right.
Meaning that it's slavery.
Slavery.
You can be a slave of something, but speaking about slaves,
right?
Pure slaves, it's, yeah.
Okay, so slavery. Let's hear a little bit of music.
Sure.
It's only
And we are Israel is Real, 1590, WSMN 1590, the free voice for Israel. Our guest today is has a very long and wonderful resume. I'm going to try quickly to kind of go through what it is. Mr. Charles Jacobs, Dr. Charles Jacobs, he's a longtime social activist who over two decades has founded a lot of organizations, really important organizations, that deal with unmet challenges. Several of these have become national institutions. For example, in 1988, he founded CAMRA, and we've had guests from CAMRA, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, which is today the preeminent Middle East media watch organization in the United States. 1993, he founded together with he founded the American Anti-Slavery Group, AASG, along with an African Muslim and Christian, Mohammed Atti and David Chand, which brought international attention to the enslavement of tens of thousands of mostly Christian Africans in Sudan who were victims of the radical Islamic regime in Khartoum. In 2001, he flew into Sudan on a rescue mission and freed thousands of slaves, and he's done that again. We'll hear about that. In the year 2000, Coretta Scott King and Boston Mayor Thomas Menino presented Charles with the first ever Boston Freedom Award for his abolitionist work. In 2002, he was invited to the White House signing of the Sudan Peace Act. In 2002, again, in response to the sudden emergence of a new global anti-Semitism, Charles founded with Avi Goldwasser the David Project. And we've had also guests from the David Project on, which is now an organization that promotes a fair and honest discussion of the Middle East conflict and also has evolved as a center for Jewish leadership. And in 2008, which I believe brings us to the current year, he, in the response to the threat of Islamic radicalism's rapid penetration of American society and the failure of civic and political leaders to deal with the threat, he founded, together with Dennis Hale and Sheikh Ahmed Mansour, the Americans for Peace and Tolerance organization, whose work was to expose and challenge the radical Islamic organizations and to support moderate Muslims in America. So he's also widely published, and he has appeared on local and national television and radio. And what a resume. And I would like to introduce our listeners today to Dr. Charles Jacobs. Boker Tov, Charles.
Hi, Boker Tov. Just one minor correction. I didn't found the group CAMRA. I co-founded the Boston branch of CAMRA, which was an organization that had already existed. And the Boston branch that we founded eventually became the national office. So, but everything else you said was pretty much right on target.
Wonderful. Thank you for that correction. the main thing is, I have said to you in person when I've met you that I much admire you and all you have done, for all the work that you've done in the world, because, you know, you are taking on challenges that, we said, have been unmet, and bringing them to the forefront, and you're active and doing something. And I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. Yes.
Yeah. Let's start with your work in Sudan, because I understand it's something that, is recently going on. When did you, let's go back a little bit, actually. When did you decide to become politically active for all of these kinds of just causes?
Well, in the beginning, when we started with the CAMRA, I was shocked and angered by the media treatment of the Jewish state, unfairly distorting the news, making Israel seem as though it were among the cruelest of nations, giving the Palestinian cause full headlines every day in ways that were just unfair and untrue. And so I suppose I was sitting there like many other people, reading my daily Boston Globe and fuming. And I found that in a local paper, The Tab, a woman named Andrea Levin had written a critique of the Globe's coverage, and it said, she expressed everything that I was thinking so eloquently, so I I went to meet her, and the two of us decided to do something, and what we found was that there was an organization, a small organization in Washington called CAMRA, Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, and we started our Boston branch, and we worked quite hard to document just lies and distortions, and it caught on, and it caught on, and so that's why I did that.
Yeah.
And CAMRA today is probably the preeminent media watch group for Israel and in America. So I'm happy to have helped with that effort.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I wanted to. I was thinking in my mind is, you know, I did you march with the King in those civil rights marches in the 60s?
Oh yeah,
were you part of that?
When I was a young man, I actually went on the. I attended Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech march.
Wow.
And, I was born in Newark, New Jersey. I had liberal parents who cared about civil rights, and I guess I got it from them. And I was moved by the events in the South. I almost got chosen as somebody from my high school to go to the South with voter registration, and I almost went. This was the time when... people from the North who went to the South were killed. You remember Schwerner and Goodman and Cheney. So those were, I suppose, that was the beginning of my interest. It began, like, as many people in my generation with the civil rights movement, then Martin Luther King.
Yeah,
that's
I remember.
That's why it was a real honor to have his widow give me Boston first Freedom Award for my work in Sudan.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. I mean, I was wondering if that was one of the things that kind of sparked you and, you know, jump-started your career in this.
Well, I think Martin Luther King jump-started probably a lot of people's activism in those days. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of the story I don't think that people have explored, but I would bet you that an awful lot of activists can trace their interests in human rights to Martin Luther King.
Definitely.
Boker Tov, Dr. Charles. This is Sonia speaking.
Hello?
I said Boker Tov, Dr. Charles. This is Sonia speaking.
Hello?
Hi. I thought that you maybe cannot hear me. I would like to go to the anti-Semitism, not because the Sudanese slavery is not an important issue, but because we have so limited time. We know that the face of the anti-Semitism is changing every day. And it's taking new forms. Can you please describe in a nutshell how anti-Semitism looks today and why?
Sure. Sure. Anti-Semitism is a virus that morphs, that changes over time. And what's happened in the recent past is that people in the West mostly no longer hate Jews because of either our religion, Judaism, or because of our race, but because of our state. And that has changed everything. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. The idea that only the Jews can't have a state while everybody else can. The idea that Jews, in operating the most important project ever, that is the founding, creation, and development and maintenance of the Jewish homeland state, that this is somehow... the target of hatred, animosity, opprobrium, hypercriticism. This is the new anti-Semitism, and the Jews were not ready for this to happen. They misinterpreted and misunderstood this new kind of anti-Semitism. We're used to being hated by people on the right we're used to being hated by, Christian anti-Semitism and Nazi anti-Semitism. And all of a sudden comes this hypercriticism of Israel. And the Jewish community, especially its leadership, completely misunderstood this. They thought that these attacks, which were in effect and in reality very well-funded and very highly organized, and the product of what you might have thought was an unlikely coalition of the left with the Arab world and the Muslim world, they thought of these attacks were they came masquerading themselves as honest criticism, and the mistake in the Jewish community was to answer the charges. So all the Jews of our generation know that we had a handbook of response called Myths and Facts. Remember?
Yes.
And it treated the attack as though these were simply myths, misunderstandings that could be corrected. Things could be set straight simply by explaining yourself. No, it's not true that Jews did this. No, it's, don't you see, it's not true. Well, this of course was the wrong kind of response, but that's the response that we selected and we're kind of have been stuck with. So anti-Zionism is the new form of anti-Semitism, and again, all of the established Jewish organizations, the defense organizations, were caught unawares, and as you know, like with any large organizations, they find it difficult to shift. People are still collecting money to fight, a few neo-Nazis running around Iowa rather than focusing on the new problem, which is huge increase in of Islamic anti-Semitism plus the left-wing attack on Israel. And that is the threat that the Jewish world faces today, and it still has not adjusted. So this is the biggest problem that we face.
Mm-hmm. It takes...
apart from the Iranian atomic bomb, but on an ideological level, Israel is being delegitimized, is being defamed, and while Israel is quite good at fighting on the military battlefield, not only Israel, but America, but world Jewry has failed to fight this ideological battle, and books will be written about why they failed and how they failed. But it is a huge failure, and it is an enormous problem.
I think it's a slow coming to awareness, which is the problem. It's a slow acceptance of there is a reality there. You know, maybe perhaps living in a comfortable world for such a long time where we're, like you said, Jews are kind of used to being hated, but have learned to live with it. And now things are quite different, and it's taking them a little bit of time to wake up to a new reality. You had a wonderful article called "See No Antisemitism, Hear No Antisemitism," which I think you presented these issues. And also began to suggest a new response. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes. I wonder if you could maybe get us started on that at least. And unless maybe we'll take a break now and then we can talk about that when we come back. What do you think?
That's fine. Why don't we take a break now? How long?
Yeah. It'll be about 2 or 3 minutes and then we'll come back and I'd like to hear your suggestions for a new response.
Okay,
we're talking with Dr. Charles Jacobs. This is Israel is Real on WSMN 1590.
Under a blanket of sun.
WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and this is Israel is Real with Rachel and Sonia. And we would like to take a moment to thank some of our sponsors. The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main & Associates, a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialist at Vern Main & Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street, that's 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or again on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know that 56 countries are Islamic around the world? 49 are Roman Catholic, 20 are Protestant, 12 are Eastern Orthodox, 4 are Hindu, and 1 is Jewish. In order to receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
And we're listening today to the music of Tofa'a, and you can find them at www.tofaah.com, tofaah.com. And we're also brought to you by Rachel Music, www.rahelmusic.net. And we're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And we're speaking with Dr. Charles Jacobs, a social activist. And we were discussing Dr. Jacobs. Shalom, Boker Tov. Still with us?
I'm still with you, yes.
Good. We were talking about anti-Semitism, the new anti-Semitism, the new ways of understanding it, and the perhaps a new response. We mentioned your article called See No Anti-Semitism, Hear No Anti-Semitism. And we had mentioned the new roles in Jewish leadership, things like that. And we'd like to hear your suggestions, how to respond today to the new anti-Semitism.
First of all, there has to be an understanding. Before you can respond, one has to have an understanding and an analysis about the sources of this animus toward us and the nature of it. And I think people were very confused because there is an alliance between the left and the Muslim world to target the Jewish state. Okay, and those are two very different kinds of hatreds, but they have come together and work together and cooperate. So let's start off with the left. So the American left or the Western left hates Western power, is in love with an image of the primitive world, darker-skinned, poorer indigenous peoples are, by that very fact, more moral than whiter people who have who live in developed countries. So the Palestinians, I would call this as if Palestinianism has become a romantic attachment of intellectuals and pseudo-intellectuals on the left, because it's come kind of, you know, Rousseau's Noble Savage. These are the authentic people, and the Jews, you know, are seen falsely as only coming from Europe and only being, you know, exploiters and colonizers. And if you add a little bit of Leninism and Marxism in there, you make a whole drama about the white exploiters. Okay. At the same time, in the left doesn't like the nation state anymore. Really, it likes globalism. So the irony for the Jews is that while we were hated in Europe pre and during the Holocaust, because we were outsiders and we didn't have a nation, and we stuck to ourselves. Now we're hated because we do have a nation, and you know, having a nation is on the outs when it should be universalist. You know, so before we were people without a country, we were universal. We were sort of as threatening because we were so universal. Now we're particularist, and so that's the reason. So that's an unfortunate thing that the world just turned upside down about that on us. So the left hates Israel.
I'm just going to play a devil's advocate or whatever. I'm just wondering, as you're speaking, why were the Jews never thought of as the indigenous sort of underworld kind of people in need for some kind of attention?
Because the Arab propaganda completely erased the fact that most of the Jews in Israel came from the Middle East, where they were oppressed under Islam. Where we made a film in the David Project called The Forgotten Refugees,
yes,
which depicted the stories, the poignant stories of Jews who were exactly were that, were the indigenous, but they lied about it. I mean, they made us only into, you know, European exploiters, wealthy European exploiters coming from a foreign place outside of the Middle East, from Europe, to displace an already existing innocent, impoverished, indigenous, darker-skinned people. I mean, that's the big lie of this time, right? That's the big lie of this time. The big lie of last time was a little different, so they shifted. So they lied. And also, again, this is a failure of on the Jewish side of countering that lie and talking about the condition of Jews and others under Islam as oppressed people.
As what kind of people?
As oppressed people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, and then so that's the left, and then on the Muslim side, you have a real history and heritage and tradition of hatred of Jews from the very beginning, in the Quran, in the Hadith, we're the sons of monkeys and pigs. We're the ones who rejected the Prophet Muhammad. We, etc., etc. And under Islam, by the way, Jews and Christians too are second class or third class peoples who, although they did not have to be and do not have to be converted to be Muslims like pagans do, right? And we can talk about Sudan and what happens there. They do have to, and they're allowed to keep their Judaism and their Christianity under very specific subjugationist conditions. So Jews throughout the Muslim world and throughout Jewish history were always under the legal strictures of having to be unequal. We couldn't have, you know, in some places in the Muslim world, Jews had to wear funny clothes to distinguish them and to humiliate them. The yellow star that Hitler used originated in the Muslim world. Now, sometimes these rules were more lax in their application, and sometimes the Jews did okay, but it could change any minute, and it was generally very bad. Read what Maimonides has to say about how the Jews were treated by in the Islamic world. And this whole business about a golden age and wonderful cooperation, this is just not true. I mean, not to say that there weren't moments of time where it was not so bad, and not to say that in sometimes it was better than the Jews were treated under Christianity. But in general, the Jews and Christians are considered as dhimmi, people of the pact, who had to subjugate themselves, pay a poll tax, not have rights, not be able to testify in court to defend themselves, wear special clothing to distinguish themselves as a humiliated secondary people. Now,
And this is something that hasn't changed. I mean, this is something that's alive and living today.
This is something that's alive and living today. Now, for such a people, such a despised people, to be able to have self-rule in Israel is a theological catastrophe for Islam. That's not supposed to happen. How can it be that these dhimmi people that God, Allah, put in this this horrible condition of servitude and subjugation, how could they have crawling out of the ashes of Europe, defeated six Arab armies, and claimed the piece of holy Arab soil for themselves? So the problem for Israel in the Middle East is not one of boundaries, it's one of existence. And, by the way, here's how Sudan fits in. The southern Sudanese, I just came back from Sudan, just voted to have a partition in which they will separate off from the Arab-Muslim North and form their own country, which will be a Christian country. Well, that, guess what? That's the second Israel, in a way, right? At least in the eyes of Islam. It's the second non-Muslim, demi-freed, liberated demi-state. That's an incredible story, and people don't quite understand how miraculous this is. This is the second time that Arab colonialism, Arab imperialism in the region has been rolled back, Israel being the first. And when I was in Sudan last month, the Sudanese who knew anything knew that. And they would say, you were the first to defeat Arab armies, we are the second.
We're talking with Dr. Charles Jacobs, and this is Israel is Real on WSMN 1590. We'd like to hear more about the Sudan. Before you do that, or maybe you can tie it in together, we did want to understand, what should the new response be? What kind of new responses are we looking at now that need to understand this in a new light?
Yes. Okay, so first of all, we have to understand that the problem does not come from the right. It's not to say that there are no neo-Nazis hanging around. It's not to say that, you know, that there's no such thing as Christian anti-Semitism, that it all... But the main thrust against us has to be identified as coming from this left Muslim coalition, and particularly Islamic anti-Semitism. Robert Wistrich, who is a major international scholar on Islamic anti-Semitism, has just written a book. It's so frightening. I mean, your listeners probably don't know because they read the mainstream media, which blocks this out. But in every Muslim country, little boys and girls are being taught that we're the sons of monkeys and pigs, you know, that Israel is theft, and that Jews are, close to being the devil, or worse. This is a horrible, horrible thing, and it must be stopped. And in America, you have people immigrating to this country who go to college campuses, who have not been put through sensitivity training to kind of wash that hatred away, and they come and they're among us. So no one in the Jewish world of any power and consequence is taking this on. They don't want to do it. That's dangerous. So the first thing is that it has to be understood, and it has to be, you know, where's our strategy? Why aren't we arguing for sensitivity courses to immigrants? Like they have, you know, for blacks and women's issues and gay issues. Why aren't we making Islamic anti-Semitism a major topic, you know? We're not, and the Jewish defense agencies are not. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's the first thing. The second thing is...
So the first thing would be to institute, as we say, sensitivity training courses and...
That would be one tactic, but then, you know, but strategically... our leaders have to tell us that this is the problem, and they don't want to do it because they don't know what to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. They have to acknowledge the problem.
They have to acknowledge the problem. And secondly, we have to understand, our leaders have to tell us we live in a new time. This is a new time. People are not hating us now because we killed baby Jesus. People are not hating us now because we're racially, inferior, like Hitler said. People are hating us now because we have a Jewish state. And in the Muslim world, because we're Jews. Not because we killed Jesus, but because we're Jews. Mm-hmm. And we're in the new time, and our leaders are not telling us that. So that is the biggest problem that we have. Because we're a very smart people. We're very creative. We're very thoughtful. And if we knew what the problem was that we had to address, and we better address it, we would come up with solutions. This is new. You know, there's no science of fighting anti-Semitism. It'll be trial and error. We'll try this, we'll try that. But if we don't address it, we are just walking blindfold into a pit. Mm-hmm. another piece about this that is on the more optimistic side. We are not alone. The Muslim world targets the Jews primarily first because they're enraged about the creation of Israel, but because we're the weakest. But they're going after the Christians, and they're going after the Hindus. And I just came from a breakfast this morning with a man who works for Christian Solidarity International and goes into Iraq. And the Christians in Iraq are in horrible shape, horrible. And the Christians in Egypt, the Coptic Christians in Egypt, are in terrible shape. And who knows what will happen now in Egypt.
Right.
The Christians in Sudan were, you know, they killed 2 or 3 million people in southern Sudan in a self-declared jihad that the media won't call that, but that's what it was. And the Christians call that a hidden Holocaust, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're not, and the Hindus in India are under siege by Muslim radicals. So we have an enormous opportunity to form alliances with the victims and targets of radical Islam. And indeed, in New York, I'm working with a group called the Human Rights Coalition Against Radical Islam, which you could find on the web. And there we are a kind of rainbow coalition of victims and targets of Islam: Sikhs, Hindus, Coptic Christians, Christians from South Sudan, etc.
What is the name of that organization again?
Human Rights Coalition Against Radical Islam, HRCARI. And you can see them on the web.
.org?
And they've held, they've held demonstrations in down, and they've held demonstrations in New York City. And it's a new organization, and it's growing, and people should, send them a few dollars.
Wonderful. Doctor, we're speaking again with Dr. Charles Jacobs, and this is Israel is Real, WSMN 1590. Sonia.
Dr. Jacobs, I would like to understand why the media is silent about Sudan and about anti-Semitism and anything that can make us more aware about the dangers that we have around.
Okay, because the media has a mindset, and it's a liberal or ultra-liberal mindset. And in the media, and people who are reporters don't go get a job to report the news. They go to change the world, right? And they have adopted what they've been taught in college, that the West is evil, you know, that, as I said before, indigenous, darker-skinned, impoverished people are, by their very nature, more moral and have been victimized by the West, that the West lives on undeserved wealth and exploits and despoils the world. And I know this because I send my daughters to college, and I know what I mean. It's in the, you can't breathe the air on a college campus without breathing that in. So then who are the Jews in this scheme? Well, the Jews are the bad white guys. The Jews now... I mean, that's the irony. Before, they hated us because we weren't the white guys. Not because they hate themselves. They hate us because we are the emblematic of being the white guys.
Right.
We're the exploiters. We're the imperialists.
The occupiers, the colonists.
But right. And the occupiers, etc.
But in Sudan, the slavers haven't been very white there.
No, but that's why nobody's reporting it. Exactly. In Sudan... It's Arabs have black slaves, right? Now, did you ever, I mean, think about that phrase. Arabs, Muslims have black slaves. That's
yes.
The story in Sudan. Nobody would ever say that.
Why?
Right? Because why? It's politically incorrect. Because
oh.
You're racist, you're Islamophobic, you're anti-Arab, you're bigoted, you're a nasty person. And besides, who are you who had whites, who had black slaves here in America to criticize others? So there's all kinds of reasons that people are blind and say wrong and distorted things. And it has to do with this mindset of the West, which is in doubt of itself and which doesn't like itself very much.
Well, we're very, very concerned about doing the right thing all the time and not saying bad things. And we want to censor our speech and censor the words we use. And I guess that's blocking out actually the facts on the ground.
And by the way, we're on a Jewish program, and we care about Jewish lives and Israeli lives. But to tell you the truth, the biggest victims of this thing, which I call the human rights complex, is not the Jews. It's all of the victims of Islam. You think about this. Where is the feminists about how
exactly
women are treated under it? Where are the gay groups about right how gays are treated, actually hung and slaughtered and sliced up to bits and in the Arab world? Where are the black groups who don't talk about, although we got some, the slaves of Sudan and Mauritania? So, I mean, those people have been slaughtered and enslaved. I mean, they're the ones who are the real victims of this because they happen to have the wrong oppressors, right? If the slavers in Sudan were white, well, you know that, you know, Amnesty International would close down Wall Street until everybody was free. But if the slavers are Arabs, it doesn't help them in their mindset.
Well, it goes pretty much back to the same thing. We're not quite up to date about the change that's overcome us. We're not quite aware of it. Sonia, you wanted to say something. Dr. Charles Jacobs.
There's more than not being aware. There's a resistance to understanding it and accepting it. Because if you accept it, you better change your life because this is a real danger. You can't just relax and enjoy and be fat and prosperous and, you know, happy. If the picture I'm painting is true, wow.
Yeah. It's Sonia, you wanted to ask Dr. Charles Jacobs a question.
I am wondering how much have to do with a very narrow, mindset. Usually once the journalists have been extremely intelligent and extremely well prepared, they knew history, and today it's looked like they have a lack of knowledge, and this is together with what you said. I'm sorry.
Well, it is true that the world has become dumbed down. It is true. Nobody knows anything. Anybody can call himself a reporter because he went to journalism school and knows how to write structural paragraphs. This is true. There are no, people who major in history don't become reporters.
Right.
So part of it is that they know nothing. They know nothing. And the other part of it is that this mindset is the politically correct mindset, and everything else is taboo. So if you add these two things together, you get the daily lies of the media. And listen, people still buy the New York Times and think that what they're reading has anything to do with reality.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous reality that we're living of a non-reality. Dr. Charles Jacobs, I wanted to just, if you don't mind, we're going to run out of time soon, so I wanted to really speak about what you've just accomplished what Sudan has accomplished and what you've done there.
I put together an anti-slavery movement with others in the early 1990s, and if it weren't for that issue, no one would have paid attention to Sudan, because otherwise it was just one more war in Africa, and there were many of those. But the idea that black women and children could be bought and sold for $15 or $20 shocked the conscience of America, and we were able to put together a very unlikely left-right coalition to fight against this, which included people on the left like Bonnie Frank, Nat Hentoff, the Congressional Black Caucus, and people on the right like Pat Robertson, Senator Brownback, George Bush. And we eventually got through a grassroots campaign with others who joined us, got to George Bush, and he forced a truce on the war in Sudan in 2005, which had a provision in the treaty that 6 years later, which was just last month, January 9th, the South could vote to separate. And I was there. I went to Sudan January 9th. I interviewed people voting. I also participated in the slave liberation operation in which we liberated 397 slaves. People can look at that on my website, iabolish.org, the letter iabolish.org. You can see my reports from there and pictures of slaves, branded women, people with their fingers chopped off, etc.
Wow.
So It was the most amazing thing that I've done, and I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm overjoyed with that, and I wish them well.
Sorry, we had a technical issue there. Could you repeat what you just said?
From where?
Oh, I think you said you were very happy.
I'm extraordinarily happy. It was a miracle that this could ever have happened. And as I say, the Islamic world will not be happy with this because it's the second case where non-Muslim population achieved self-rule in an area formerly dominated by Muslims.
Now, will there be a potential for an alliance with Israel? Not an alliance, but a friendship there between the southern Sudan and Israel as well?
No doubt. No doubt.
Good.
I don't think it'll happen immediately. I don't think it'll happen very publicly. I think it'll be... the southern Sudanese will know who their friends are and will make their alliances in the way that they seem fit. And I think it's clear that there would be friendship. Yep.
Wonderful. We're speaking with Dr. Charles Jacobs, and we are going to have to finish today, but it's been a real pleasure. We are so glad that we were able to speak with you today, Dr. Jacobs. And can you tell our listeners, how can they find you? You've mentioned a couple of organizations, the iabolish.org and yeah.
The other one is www.peaceandtolerance.org, and that's either one of them, they can reach me and find incredible information.
So that's www.peaceandtolerance.org.
Yes.
And you've got the letter I, abolish.org, and you also mentioned hrcari.org.
I don't know the website, but if they look up HRCARI on Google, they'll find the exact website. But they won't find me there because I'm just a consultant.
Okay. Well, you're an important consultant.
Okay.
You're the man behind the scenes that makes it all happen.
Sometimes.
Dr. Jacobs, it's been a pleasure. We thank you with all of our hearts.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Shabbat take care, and we will be in touch.
Okay.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom. And speaking of Shabbat shalom, we were going to we've got about 3 seconds here, no, 3 minutes, to remind us of our Torah portion of the week.
The Torah portion is the Torah.
It's one of those
Torah
days.
The Torah portion is Parashat Tetzaveh.
Brain freeze with the freezing weather, right?
I'm hope not.
Yeah.
The verse in this week's Parashat Tetzaveh states, "Now you shall command the Bnei Israel, the nation of Israel, that they shall take for your pure present olive oil for illumination to kindle the lamp continuity." This verse perhaps hints to the concept of the Jews being a light into the nation. God chose us to be for illumination, to be a shining example for the nation. Unfortunately, we know that the Jewish nation is not perfect. Although every Jew strives to be a shining example, some fall short. The misdeeds of Jews are often publicized with great fanfare. The explanation of this phenomenon is the following. Dog bites a man, not new. But a man bites a dog is on front page news. Therefore, Shabbat Shalom and take care. Do good deeds.
Do good deeds, that's right. And think of a new response, the new world we're living in. Shabbat Shalom, we're Rachel and Sonia. This is Israel is Real. Our theme song, Hinei Matov, is by myself, Rachel. That's rachelmusic.net, rahelmusic.net. We're listening to Tofa'ah, the music of Tofa'ah, tofa'ah.com, tofa'ah.com. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11, on radio WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and wsmnradio.com. We are thanking our guest, Dr. Charles Jacobs, from today. Shabbat Shalom from
Shabbat Shalom.
Israel is Real.